I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We are all entitled to sexual health, just as much as physical and mental health.
We want to make it easier for folks to find resources. However they engage with us, there's no wrong door.
So it's important that people are able to get access to care that is affirming.
Talking about what their sex life is, about their concerns, and to make sure they're healthy.
Do it for them. Do it for you, Montgomery County.
Your sexual health matters. Visit doitforumc.org.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Hello and welcome to the 5 Yard Dynasty podcast with me, Rich Cooling. Back today, another gorgeous sunny day. I'm joined by Liam again. How are you doing?
Not bad, thank you. How are you doing, Rich?
Yeah, not too bad. We had a nice family day out to Marwell today, so got incredibly warm. Didn't see hardly any animals because it was too hot for them all. But the little ones had a fun day, so can't complain.
Good stuff.
So I guess before we dive into kind of today's, main topic for the show, obviously some pretty big news drops over the weekends, and Julio Jones is on his way to Tennessee to form maybe the most physically imposing, shall we say, wide receiver core I think I've ever seen. Liam, what are your thoughts on the trade? Do you think there's any, from a dynasty perspective, any big winners, any big losers? Or
I suppose for me, AJ Brown is probably a big winner from this. I know that everyone liked the idea of him getting a bunch of targets, especially those vacated target truthers, but to me it was never going to happen. But at least now he's got another option next to him, whereas he previously didn't. It was either Adam Humphries, Des Fitzpatrick the rookie if he stepped up, or Adam Firkser. But now with Julio, you've got safeties are going to have to make that decision of which side of the field are you going to cover. So to me, that, and then obviously Calvin Ridley. Let's see how he does in a number one role this year. Because as I'm a Packers fan, I'm going to be obligated to bring this up. But he had no catches at all when he played Green Bay when he got shut down by Jair. So,
do you think that we could see the kind of Juju effect with Ridley, in that he was, you know, obviously hugely productive as a two. When he had and let's be honest, a historic receiver lined up opposite him. Now he's stepping into that number one role. Obviously, we've seen Juju over the last couple of years. Yes, he's had a few injuries, he's had other competition, a few bits and pieces, but he's never really stepped into that role after Antonio Brown left. Do you think Ridley will do that, or do you think we could see a similar step for him?
I suppose I'm more risk averse and more of a skeptic. So I do think that he's going to regress a little bit, but just looking at his stats from last year, he did do really well when Julio wasn't on the field. So I don't think it will be to the same extent. Juju kind of disappeared, quote unquote. But I do think that Ridley is going to have an effect, whether that is Pitts comes in after year one, maybe, because we know what tight ends are like in the league. Maybe he comes in with a bunch of targets and tries to take some of that coverage away. But year one, I definitely think Ridley is going to see a lot more double teams and a lot tougher coverage. So I can see that definitely impacting his fantasy value and fantasy production.
Yeah, I do think you can humour me and let me nerd out a little bit. I'm really intrigued to see that Tennessee offense this year. I think it's the last 2 years, they've run more max protection out of play action than any other team in the NFL. I think it's probably 2-3 times the amount. And what I mean by that is that 7-man protections, obviously with the running back, taking the fake play action, the quarterback throwing the ball. So only two receivers out en route. Now, is that an Arthur Smith thing? In which case, are we going to see Tennessee continue to be in that, you know, really heavy match protect offense and just have Julio and AJ Brown running the ball, running out downfield? Or is that a Tennessee thing? And if it is an Arthur Smith thing, does this now, what's that offense going to look like? If we're going to see a lot of 6-7-8 man match protections on that play action, does that potentially limit the upside of Kyle Pitts? Does that mean that, you know, we're going to see 3 receiving weapons used? Because I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about Russell Gage stepping in. He was, I think, wide receiver 30-ish in terms of his finish last year. I'm really excited about him as a prospect. But I think there's a lot of unknown about what offense Arthur Smith and the Falcons are going to run this year.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know how they're going to run it. I don't know whether Pitts is going to come in as the tight end one there, or if he does, how much of that role is impacted by Hayden Hurst, because I can't see him just disappearing. It's not like he's a bad tight end. He's not top tight end for fantasy. And I know he was being drafted for that upside last season, with Hooper having such a good year the year before. And now Hayden Hurst seems to be forgotten. So I definitely think that there's something there. And if there are two tight end sets, at least Pitts is getting on the field. And maybe Matt Ryan has audibles to get into passing situations rather than a run, or puts Pitts onto a route instead of a blocking assignment. So I do think that there'll be a lot of two tight end sets. Whether it's the same amount as last year, I have no idea. At the moment, I suppose we all guess until the season comes, and we try and go off the information very early on in the season. But as for your point on Gage, I love him as a prospect, but I don't see him as anything more than a wide receiver 3 in fantasy still.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, I'm probably even lower than that. I'd say, yeah, sort of wide receiver 50-ish, I'd be comfortable having him this year. I am really intrigued to see if we're going to see the kind of those Tennessee 2 receiver sets with Pitts as the X and Ridley as the Z. I'm fascinated, because you could get, you know, some 3 tight end looks with the running back in and the 1 wide receiver on the field, and Pitts lining up in that sort of AJ Brown role from that Arthur Smith offense. It could be absolutely fascinating. I'm very intrigued to certainly watch it play out this year.
I think you've just given fantasy Twitter a massive excitement boost there, saying that Pitts is going to line up as a receiver. I think if that happens at any point during the first game, I think fantasy Twitter is just going to go wild.
The Cole Pitts hype can't get any higher. I've just seen him go as tight end 2 in a startup that I'm doing. Yeah, it's truly ridiculous that a player is going second overall at a position having never stepped onto the field. Let's be honest, I'm very hopeful that he's going to be incredible. But I'm a little bit sort of cool the Jets, because you're drafting him at his ceiling, quite frankly. But enough about Tennessee and Atlanta. So what we're going to do today is we're going to start our kind of sophomore scrutiny series, which credit to Liam for the name, because it's certainly not my creativity to come up with that. So what we're going to do over the next few weeks is we're going to be diving in position by position, looking back at the kind of second year players, so obviously last year's rookies, have a quick chat about kind of the main guys at each position. The idea being that these are the guys that will probably more than any other make or break your dynasty rosters, your dynasty seasons. You know, if you can be right on these second year players, they're going to, by this time next year, be, if they're not already, you know, the top two, three priced assets at each position. Or they will plummet in value, disappear, and be, you know, those kind of dynasty busts that we all fear. So we're starting with the running back position. There's, again, I feel like I've coined this phase, but there's the elite eight. So that's, in fact, the first seven guys drafted, and then James Robinson. So we're going to talk through each of those, their kind of situation, what we think about them. And then if there's time, we might even mention some of the lower drafted guys. But starting off in the first round, so obviously we had Clyde Edwards-Helaire went 32nd overall to the Kansas City Chiefs. The hype on him last year was absolutely insane. He was going as the fifth overall player in startups, not just rookie drafts. You know, the hype was absolutely mental, and he had a solid year. Let's not pretend that he did anything spectacular, but the hype has completely disappeared, and he's now fallen down boards. You can now get him in that sort of wide receiver, 18 to 20 range in some startups. And I think that, to me, the hate's gone a little bit too far. I quite like him. I quite like the price that he's currently going at to acquire. Where are you on CEH, Liam?
Yeah. I like him at his value at the moment. I think last year he was set up to fail. Not only was he going 101 in rookie drafts, or in a lot of them, I know that there was a couple that I was in where he went 102 because there were JT Truthers there, or it's Superflex. So or I'm talking people, running backs there. Yeah.
Not just JT Truthers, just people that made the right decision.
It doesn't matter how you got there, as long as you got there. But yeah, I think he's a great value in startups at the moment. I think he went as the RB18 in our recent startup. I'm not sure on that. But he's got that upside. He hasn't got Lev Bell anymore to take that value. I do think that McKinnon is going to have a little bit of passing down work. Whether that is actually going to affect CH's production this year, I have no idea. I do think that it's not going to be as much as some people may fear, or it's going to be a little bit more than the dismissals that we're seeing elsewhere. But I do think that he's got great value in startups at the moment. But if you try and trade for him, he's probably going for more than what you'd pay.
I think that he could well be the guy to buy now out of any of these bunch. I think all of these guys are, you know, being priced ridiculously high because you've got that age, because you've got the, you know, the running back scarcity that is constantly talked about. But I do think that he is gettable. I've bought a couple of shares of him this offseason. I bought him for a 22 first and a 22 second. I traded him straight up, maybe my favourite trade of the offseason. I traded him straight up for Javonte Williams, which I do in every single one of my leagues. Yeah, absolutely. I think that at the moment, you know, we talked about it last year, he was being drafted at his absolute ceiling. Whereas for me this year, he's being drafted at his absolute floor. I think that he is going to settle in as a solid RB2. He's going to offer decent pass catching potential. I don't think he ever really got used that way last year. And I think his potential, his you know, his upside is still RB2, RB3, RB4 overall, because that offense is just so explosive, is going to score so much that if he does get a true kind of workhorse volume, if he does start getting the goal line work again, then there's no reason why he, you know, this time next year he couldn't be seeing that price where he was 12 months ago at that, you know, 104, 105 in one QB startups.
Yeah, I'm with you. And to the listeners, I really do promise that the phrase he's being drafted at his absolute ceiling isn't going to come up with every one of these players. I know we've said it with Pitts and we've said it with CEH so far. But yeah, I agree that he's got that upside and he's young as well. He's 22 years old. So it's not like he's... He was a lonely declare. I do think that he's the more reasonable back that we're going to talk about over the next couple of or the next 40 odd minutes, 50 odd minutes. So yeah, if you can get him for a Javonte Williams, a first and a second next year, I would do that a trade every day of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. So where are we going next?
So this time we're going to move over to Detroit and we're going to talk about DeAndre Swift. So, most people's running back one or two pre-draft last year, and then when he got taken by Detroit, he kind of dipped in value. He saw the opposite effect to Clyde Edwards-Hilaire. Everyone thought Kerryon Johnson was going to be the issue, and then the closer to the season it got, it kind of was obvious that Swift was going to take over that number one role. And then Adrian Peterson got some carries as well and snagged some touchdowns. But I do think that this year he's going to be a good buy. I don't think he's going to get as much passing down work as people think with Jamal Williams there. Well, that might just be the Green Bay fans still trying to cling on to the energy factory that Jamal Williams used to be in Green Bay. So what are your thoughts, Rich? How do you feel about Swift?
I love Swift. I love Swift the player. I think that he is, you know, everything you could ever want from both an NFL back but also a fantasy back. I think he is a true three down back. I think his receiving usage and receiving ability, he's one of the few running backs that can line up outside and run a, you know, a competent route tree. I'm not going to sit here and say he runs a full route tree. But I think that to me, the cost is getting a little bit. I was hopeful of, once everything's happened in Detroit this season, I sort of thought that we'd get to this point in the year and people would start to feel, that offense isn't going to be very good and the price on Swift goes down. But it's not really happened. I think he's being treated as the only kind of person in town as such, and people are expecting him to basically get every single piece of volume in that offense. And so, you know, he's currently still going as the running back six in startups, which, it's about where I've got him. In fact, it's exactly where I've got him. He's in my RB6. But I just never feel particularly comfortable taking him in that sort of range, if I'm being honest. So I can get him as a later RB1, then I'm happy. But yeah, RB6 is probably a little bit rich for me at the moment still.
Yeah, I got him as the RB7 in our recent 5-yard dynasty startup. And even then, I was kind of, I feel like that position where you want to take a running back or your best players on the board of running backs, that kind of 6, 7, 8 range is where you're looking at an Akers, a Dobbins, Swift, someone along those lines, all these rookies that have got these upsides. And I don't feel comfortable taking any of them there. I took Swift, I didn't feel the most comfortable doing it at the price that I paid. I think it was the late second round in startup. So,
is he your RB2 of these second year backs?
At the moment, yes. I definitely think he's not going to be above Jonathan Taylor, obviously, but looking at the rest, I think he's the most stable out of the rest of them.
Yeah. I think the thing is as well, for me, so he was the RB20 last year. He was 17 in points per game. And this is a guy that didn't really get used properly until, week 12, week 13 last year. it felt as a Swift owner in a few leagues, it felt like I was tearing my hair out every week about they weren't handing him the car keys, and you know, they were using Adrian Peterson far too much. I think that this is an offense that, you know, the new head coach Dan Campbell, when he came in, he said he doesn't want a play caller. He wants an offensive coordinator that's going to utilize Swift out of the slot, that's going to use Swift as a workhorse. And I think that this offense, let's be honest, that receiving room, Jared Goff, isn't going to put many points on the board. So I think this offense is going to run through DeAndre Swift. And I think that it might not be the most glamorous season he's going to put up. It might not be, you know, the most efficient in terms of yards per carry or success rate or whatever, you know, efficiency stat you want to throw out. But I do think that the volume is going to be there and the receiving usage is going to be there. And I feel very confident that he is going to be an RB1 this year. And I'll be honest, I wouldn't be shocked if he was in that top five.
So you're not buying the Anthony Lynn class in Jamal Williams of the 1A?
No. I think that's pure coach speak. I think that Jamal Williams has shown that he is a fantastic pass blocking back. I think he is competent as a receiver, but he's never going to be a true workhorse running back in this league. And I think that I wouldn't be shocked if we saw, with the weakness of Detroit's receiving core, I wouldn't be shocked if we didn't see some two running back sets where you've got, you know, similar to what Green Bay did last year, where you've got Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones going out on flare routes together and things like that. I wouldn't be shocked if we didn't see Swift and Williams on the field at the same time. But I don't see why any coach is going to, you know, use Williams when you've got a better athlete, a better player and a more explosive player stood on the sideline. I just can't get my head around it personally.
Yeah, I'm with you totally.
So you hinted at your RB1 there. So the third back off the board in the NFL draft last year was perhaps, let's be honest, the most efficient, the most successful, the greatest college running back of all time. I'm sure there's going to be a few people that are upset at that phrase. Jonathan Taylor, he had a slow start to the year, shall we say. I think as soon as that Marlon Mack injury happened week one, people were already appointing him as, you know, the Lord and Saviour and expecting him to be a dynasty RB1 immediately. And it didn't really happen. We saw, you know, Nyheim Hines get a lot of pass usage. We saw a couple of Jordan Wilkins weeks in there. And then obviously that, you know, that stretch to finish the season against, you know, I'm sure Merce listening, just to, you know, keep him on the good side. It was a very poor schedule. You know, yes, he beat up on some poor offenses. Where are you on Jonathan Taylor? Do you think he's going to be, you know, the true stud? Do you think he's going to be an RB1 again this year? He's currently going in ADP as the running back 2 behind Christian McCaffrey. Are you comfortable paying that price? Do you think he's going to be the true stud?
I'm not comfortable whatsoever paying RB2 price in regular startups. I did have him as my RB1 in the rookie class. I still have him as RB1 in that rookie class, but I don't think he's as valuable as trades seem to suggest at the moment. I would still take Barkley, and I'd consider Cook over him as well, and Kamara obviously as well in that group. Even though they are a little bit older, they've all got decent contracts. The only really injury prone, quote unquote, I don't like using the phrase, is Dalvin Cook. And I suppose you could argue Barkley now, but those injuries aren't really related. So I'm not the injury expert. Those are the only people that I'd take over Taylor at the moment, but I'm never getting him as the RB5 in any startups. The two spots where I did have Taylor, I've decided to sell. So they were, yeah. That if I have Taylor at the moment, that is exactly what I'm doing. I don't see him being the RB2 this season at all.
I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet here, Liam, because I love Jonathan Taylor. I think he is fantastic. I think his blend of size and speed in that offense, behind that offensive line, is incredible. And I think he is a fantastic running back. but the price I just can't justify. You know, I've got like you, I've got zero shares of Jonathan Taylor in all of my leagues, because in a startup, I'm not paying RB2 price. I can't spend a first round pick in a super flex or a top two pick in a one QB league on Jonathan Taylor. And I did have one share. I sold him for DJ Moore and two firsts this year. And I'm very pleased with that haul. But I can't justify that price. So I love it. But to me, the hype has gone crazy. I can't see how a guy who had five or six good games is being taken as the RB2 in startups. I think that phrase again, you're drafting him at his ceiling. And I think that when you're doing that, you're destined to fail.
Yeah. And the other thing with Taylor at the moment is, although Marlon Mack did have an injury and it was a severe one, I believe it was an ACL, so he may not be the best when he comes back this season, but he is back in Indianapolis and Nyheim Hines isn't going anywhere. So it's not like he's got an open backfield and there's no competition. We saw that he had competition last year with Hines, and Marlon Mack got the first bunch of carries before he did snap that ACL, I believe it was. So it's not like he hasn't got competition, and at the moment he's being drafted as such. So
yeah, and I think that people will counter that, Liam, by saying, oh, but Jonathan Taylor got solid receiving game usage despite Nyheim Hines, but that was with Philip Rivers at quarterback, who has targeted running backs at a higher percentage than any quarterback ever in NFL history. That's now Carson Wentz is the quarterback. Yes, it's the same offense, but he's not going to target running backs check down as much as Philip Rivers. So that target share to running backs is going to reduce, which means that, again, we're talking about a limited ceiling, because we've already mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire, DeAndre Swift. I wouldn't be shocked if both of those saw more targets this year than Jonathan Taylor, because I think there is going to be a shift in the offense that's we're going to see a reduction in that target share to running backs.
Yeah, and I know it sounds like we're beating on Jonathan Taylor as a prospect at the moment. We, as Rich said, we're both extremely high on it, but I just don't think we're as high as consensus.
Yeah, he's my RB3. He's my RB3 overall. I love him. I know it sounds ridiculous me saying he's my RB3 and he's going as the RB2 and I'm slating it, but to me that step is huge. I can't see how you can draft him as the RB2 overall.
Yeah, I'm with you. So moving on, we're looking at Cam Akers next. He went in the second round for the LA Rams. Last year, he ended the season as the RB50, but he ended the season very strongly and saw his value exponentially rise. It was ridiculous how much it risen in my opinion anyway. And I think he's similar to Jonathan Taylor, who we just talked about, where if I have any shares, which I don't, I'm probably selling just because I don't like I like the value more than the player at this point. How are you feeling, Rich? How are you feeling on Akers?
I think I'll be honest. I feel like I'm out on Akers, but I just don't like guys. It sounds ridiculous. I don't like guys that come on super late in the season. And Akers, we're literally talking, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks in the regular season and the playoffs where he was incredible. I just don't like guys that do that, having not had any usage earlier in the season. Because I think that if you come in late, you are so much fresher than the defenses you're going up against. And I think that, yes, Akers was incredible down the stretch, but I'm a little bit concerned that was because he had fresh legs and the rest of the teams he's gone up against don't. I think back to, as a Jets fan, someone like Sean Green, who came in as a rookie, I want to say week 16, into the playoffs in 2009 or 2010, and was absolutely incredible. And that was purely because he hadn't played for the first 15 weeks of the season. He had complete fresh legs. And the Jets just rode him against, you know, beating up defenses. And I'm not saying that Cam Akers is Sean Green. I think that Cam Akers is a very good NFL running back. But I just think that, again, you know, we're back talking prices again. He's going as the RB7 in startups. that's one spot ahead of Nick Chubb. I'm giving Nick Chubb all day. He's going ahead of, you know, Aaron Jones. I just can't see, for me, Cam Akers outproducing those kind of guys. I'd take Swift, Dobbins, Chubb, all of them over Cam Akers. Are you as anti-Akers as I am?
Yeah, I loved him going into the pre-draft process. So I had him as the RB4 in the class behind Swift, Swift, Dobbins, and Taylor. And I really liked the amount of production he managed to get behind a poor offensive line. And I found that out earlier on in the process, and then Twitter started talking about it, and then his price started to rise. And then the more it rose, the more I didn't like him because of the price that I was having to pay to get him. And I think that's still the case now because of the good playoff run and the playoff darling that he was, that he has just risen so much in price that I don't want to take him, or I don't want to trade for him. So I think next season, I do think that he's going to have a decent season, but I think that Darrell Henderson is still going to be involved in that offense. That the Rams didn't trade up in the third round. It wasn't last year, the year before, I believe it was, to go and get Henderson. And if Malcolm Brown is seeing touches over Akers until there is an injury and a couple of things shifted in that offense, I don't know how much production and how much volume Akers is actually going to get this year compared to where he's being projected and where, or the amount that people are hoping that he does.
Yeah, I think I'm probably just a little bit more cautious buying into small sample sizes. And I think that Cam Akers, whilst he was fantastic down the stretch, it was, you know, we talked about Jonathan Taylor having a, you know, a great stretch against some weak defenses. Well, Cam Akers' sample size was even smaller. And I just think that if I'm having to spend, you know, we said RB7 prices, so that's second round of a super flex, then I need to see some greater level of production. If that means I miss out on potentially, you know, a stud running back, so be it. I'm happy to do that. But I just think that, again, call the Jets a little bit when it comes to the Cam Akers side. So the next guy, you've just mentioned him there. So it's J.K. Dobbins. So he was obviously the fifth running back off the board, went to Baltimore. Pretty crowded backfield that first year. Had some solid production. So he was the running back 31 overall last year. Obviously, we saw again in the playoffs, Mark Ingram was a kind of a healthy scratch down the stretch. J.K. Dobbins started to get more of that kind of workhorse role. And I think people were penciling him in for a 60-70% opportunity share this year. And then suddenly in the last few days, we've seen Gus Edwards gets re-signed to a pretty decent deal. You know, it was a 2-year, $10 million deal, which $5 million a year, it doesn't sound much, but for essentially what is a 1B running back, that is decent money. So I do wonder if the Dobbins price might drop a little bit. But what do you think of J.K. Dobbins?
I feel like we're just repeating the same things for the past couple of running backs. I don't like the price that he's at. I like the player. I just don't like the price at the moment. I've been trying to sell in the one spot that I've got him, and I'm trying to buy CMC to go and compete in that spot. But that's just a situation where I've got an older team and I'm trying to go and compete. I still don't like the range that he's being drafted in. And I think the common thing that we're getting at with all of these running backs so far, apart from Jonathan Taylor, is they all finished as the RB2 or an RB2 or worse last season. So we're all acting as if the RB1s for the next 5 years. But in reality, only one of these running backs so far have hit the RB1 threshold that we're looking for. So I think we just need to slow down. I know that everyone wants to hit on the next young running back, but at the moment, the prices are so high that we are really paying up for a risk that we don't even know whether it's going to hit yet.
Yeah. I love J.K. Dobbins, the talent. I love that offense. I love the potential of, you know, what he could be. I just think that I'm nervous, and it's the same as goes for all of these guys, and it means I could well miss out. But in fact, I've just had a quick look. I'm actually higher than consensus on J.K. Dobbins by looks of it. So he's my RB8 and he's RB9 in terms of ADP. So yeah, that shows you how much I like the player. He's my RB8 overall. I just think that, again, I want to see it a little bit more. But I do think that the potential of J.K. Dobbins, to me, I think his ceiling is higher than pretty much any other running back being drafted. I think he has the potential to be an absolute stud. But as you said, he's being told, we're being projected that he's going to be a 60-70% opportunity share guy. And with Gus Edwards still floating around, with Lamar Jackson getting an awful lot of those passes, you know, those runs, and an offense that we're probably expecting is going to see potentially an uptick in terms of passing attempts, could it limit his kind of potential ceiling?
I think the other thing we need to cover is Lamar Jackson is the running back one in that offense, and I know that's going to annoy a couple of people, but Lamar Jackson is going to snipe not just one or two touchdowns. He's going to get a couple on the ground that means that Dobbins isn't going to get those. And then he's also going to contend with Gus Edwards, who was, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe was pretty good on the goal line as well. So I think with Dobbins that there's a lot to go around in that offense, but I also think that with the passing, or with the new weapons in the passing game they've got, they might look to pass a little bit more. I'm not saying they're going to become the new Steelers offense and they're going to throw 650 times a year. But I do think that they are going to throw the ball a lot more, which is going to decrease the rushing attempts as well. And then it is a three-headed backfield there with Lamar also in the fold for those touchdowns, which is where you're going to see those points come from, essentially.
Yeah. Do you think that we could see if there's going to be an increase in pass attempts? You know, we've talked about it a couple of times with running quarterbacks tend to target running backs less in the passing game because there's not those check downs. They tend to just take off. Do you think there's that potential ceiling in the passing game for Dobbins, who is a great passing back? He's just in the wrong offense. Or do you think that that is where he will always fall down when compared to a DeAndre Swift or something like that?
I do think his ceiling's capped with being in the same offense as Lamar, and not just from the rushing side, but from what you've just said, I don't think that he's going to see as many looks from a check down point of view. But as I said, I think Gus Edwards is going to get similar amount of looks in the passing game as well. So I suppose really it depends on how much Dobbins can run more developed routes, so more like wheel routes and angle routes maybe. I'm not sure how much the Ravens offense actually uses those routes, but something that it means that Lamar has him directly in front of him or within the numbers more than being to the side and Lamar having to think about, actually, I might need to check this down rather than running the ball. So I don't think that's his first thought when it comes to, I need to get the ball gone now.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting kind of thought exercise. If you look at DeAndre Swift, Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins, and how you personally rank them, I think probably says a lot about how you value the running back position, what you value. And let's be honest, if you can get that right, I think you're probably going to be in a really good position, because I do think of those three, we're probably going to see one of those disappear and not be a top 20 back in terms of value at the end of this year. I don't know which one it's going to be. You know, I personally, as I've said, I'd take Swift out of the three of them. I think that he's shown it more, and I think his ceiling's there, and I think that the passing game usage is there, and the opportunity is going to be there. But I think it's very interesting to see they're going pretty much back to back in ADP. I think most people will have them in a, you know, in a tier or within a tier of each other. And I think that if you sit down, you know, you don't have to do rankings, but if you sit down and work out which of those three you'd prefer, I think it probably says a lot about you as a fantasy or a dynasty kind of owner or player.
Yeah, I am with you on that. It will be a great exercise to see how people evaluate running backs and which route is probably best, whether it's just for these three or whether it's for future. So moving on, we're going to go to Green Bay, my love. So we're going to go to the Quadzilla or the Quadfather, depending on which thigh you're talking about, and that's AJ Dillon. He ended the season as the RB 83 in fantasy. Nothing eye popping, apart from those quads, as you'll see all over his Twitter or his Instagram. So
he had one incredible week. Was pretty much his whole season, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, the Titans week, I believe it was, where he showed Derrick Henry how to Derrick Henry in that week.
Yeah.
But I think that one week, he showed what he can do, but I also do think that some of that comes down to the Green Bay weather. It was snowing, it was extremely low temperatures. I believe it was either, I think it was just above 0 degrees centigrade, so I'm not sure how much usage Dillon is going to get in a game like that again. I do think that he got more looks specifically in that game because of the type of running back he is. I mean, he's essentially a linebacker with a running back feet. He's nearly 250 pounds. He's huge, and I think part of that game came down to the Titans defenders not wanting to tackle him with a full hard hit and maybe going for those leg tackles that may not work as well. So moving more onto the fantasy side of it, as I said, he finishes the RB 83. That was behind Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams, who were the 1-2 punch over in Green Bay. They basically split carries. I think it was around a 60-40 split towards Aaron Jones. And Aaron Jones was extremely efficient yet again. With Dillon, I think that he's going to step up into that Jamal Williams role, but maybe not as much as a pass catcher as Jamal Williams was. He's going to be more of that goal line back, maybe a thunderer just to try and pick up a few downs on the inside of the tackles. How do you feel about him in fantasy this year, Rich? Because for me, I'm not overly keen on him without an injury.
I think this is purely price dependent, but I absolutely love AJ Dillon. I think that the range that he's currently going in terms of ADP, so he's going as the RB31. So to give you a kind of an idea of who's going ahead of him, so Chase Edmonds is going as RB28, Mike Davis is going as RB29, and Leonard Fournette is going as RB30. So for me, AJ Dillon has a higher floor. I think he's going to come in and be, as you said, the 1B in that backfield. I think he's going to get probably some short yardage and goal line work. I think he's going to get, you know, probably around a 30 to 40% opportunity share. And I think that that's enough to carve out potentially RB2 numbers. And he's one injury away from being a top 10 back. You know, if Aaron Jones goes down for the season, that backfield runs to AJ Dillon and he could be, you know, an absolute monster. And if I can get him for RB31 prices, then I really like it. I think it shows that this whole conversation probably highlights how I like to play fantasy and dynasty is I will build around, if I'm competing, the one stud, you know, yes, if I can get two studs, but one stud running back that has been there, seen it, done it. And then I'm looking to take as many flyers as I can at sort of RB30 plus. And I think for AJ Dillon, the price he's going, you know, I picked him up in a couple of places for a mid to late seconds. I think that's absolute theft at those prices. I think the ceiling is there. I think he could be an absolute stud. And I think that he will be more productive this year than I think most people are expecting. I think people are writing him off as he's going to have another year in 2021 like he did last year, where he's just not really used unless there's an injury. But I think that backfield, that offense is going to be a 1A, 1B situation. I wouldn't be shocked if he wasn't punching in, you know, 8 to 10 touchdowns, stealing that goal line usage, and also getting 500 to 600 yards, and that would be as the 1B. As I said, he could be one injury away from being a complete fantasy winner.
Yeah, in that backfield, you've not got much else. You've got Kylin Hill, and then the project of Dexter Williams that the Green Bay have already shown.
I still believe.
Oh no, Green Bay have already shown that they're not a fan of Dexter Williams. So I'm not sure on who else is going to pick up that running back volume if Aaron Jones goes down, and with how volatile the running back position is with injuries, if you pick him up, as Rich said, for mid to late second, if he gets that starting role for a month, maybe he's going to see a spike in value to at least a first. Like maybe it'll be contender, so it'll be a late first, but that's still profit that you didn't have previously. And when I talk about running backs, and I know Rich has just mentioned that's his strategy, you go for these running backs hoping that expecting an injury somewhere to happen. It's not going to happen in every backfield, but in the backfields it does happen. If there's enough volume there, that's all a running back needs to show that he's worth a little bit of production for a contender to slide in as a flex. And one thing I didn't notice about AJ Dillon before, or at least I probably did and have forgotten about it in the past year, he ran a 4.53 as a 250-pound back. That is insanely fast.
Yeah.
That just blew my mind when I saw that. But yeah, I think that if he gets the volume, he's going to be good. But it just really depends on whether he's going to get that volume, and no one's going to know until you have that announcement of Aaron Jones is injured and you see after the game how long it's for.
And also, people seem to think that because Aaron Jones has signed a 4-year contract, that means AJ Dillon's never going to get the workhorse role. It's a 2-year contract for Aaron Jones. We can talk about it as much as we like. It is a 2-year contract, and there is no way that the Packers are going to keep him playing on that contract in year 3, because they're not paying him. I don't have numbers in front of me, but I think it's like 14 to 16 million in year 3 or 4. They're not paying that. And people also forget, Derrick Henry was, you know, a highly drafted running back. He was a Heisman Trophy winner, came to the Titans, and he sat pretty much for a year or two. Now, I'm not saying AJ Dillon is going to be Derrick Henry, but they're similar types of player. I wouldn't be shocked if we didn't see AJ Dillon in that potentially his third year. Once we're talking about Aaron Jones being in the final year of his contract, I wouldn't be shocked if we saw AJ Dillon start to eat into that workload to take over. And in 2023, you could have, you know, AJ Dillon as the next Derrick Henry. For a mid to late second, wouldn't you want that?
Yeah, I'm buying every day of the week if I can get him for a late second. I was going to jump in as soon as you said that he had a 4-year deal, because I know full well Green Bay are not going to keep him after the second year in 2022. So yeah, the numbers look roughly around 5 mil next year, or 2021. Nine mil in 2022, and most of that is from roster bonuses and other methods of payment where the dead cap is going to be extremely high. And then in years 3 and 4 of that deal, he goes up to 19 mil and 15 mil, but the dead cap is 6.5 and then 3. So essentially, if you cut him after the 2022 season, you save 12 million on the cap. I don't see why he's not going to play in 2023 in Green Bay.
It could be that they restructured the deal and he stays in Green Bay. But I'm saying now, there is no way that Aaron Jones plays in 2023 for Green Bay under that contract. You know, I'm quite happy putting everything on the line and saying that. So the next guy we're going to talk about, it's the late riser of the rookie draft process. He was going in late second, some places in the third round, and he completely blew up, and that is Antonio Gibson. I think he had a pretty interesting year. He obviously won that backfield. He was incredibly efficient in the red zone, had a really good kind of touchdown rate season. I am a little bit worried that that is going to regress. I think he's, you know, outperformed what we'd expect as kind of the average in terms of touchdowns. And I think that we'll see that decline. I am a little bit optimistic that he is going to see an increase in terms of pass usage. You know, this is a guy that was a wide receiver in college. I know we can sit and say that. Everybody says that every time they talk about him. But I do think that he wasn't really used that way last year. And I think that we could potentially see him used in some more expansive and interesting ways. And I do think that JD McKissic is probably going to kind of drift off after that, you know, interesting outlier season last year. He's probably not going to come back and repeat it this year. So are you excited about Antonio Gibson? Are you using this opportunity to kind of sell now that his value's starting to creep up? Or where are you on Gibson?
I think he's at a great spot, but I just wanted to come back to that wide receiver point. Did you only know, that he only ran 30 odd carries in college? It's not like we didn't hear about that in the pre-draft process.
Yeah, I heard that one or two times, certainly.
So with that out of the way, yeah, I think that his value is right where it should be at the moment. I personally like him as a player and his style of running just from a film point of view. As you said, I don't think that McKissic is going to have as much opportunity in that offense as he did last year. I do think that Gibson is going to take over that role a lot more. The only thing that concerns me is last year he might have been lent on a little bit more because of the unstable quarterback room. I mean, did they go through four quarterbacks last year?
Are you trying to engage me in another Ryan Fitzpatrick rant? Or?
I'm trying not to. That's why I haven't mentioned his name. But, yeah, they went through four quarterbacks last year through injuries or benches, etc. So I'm not overly keen on the fact that he's going to have a stable quarterback room and that might see his production go down a little bit because they trust the quarterback more than what they did in last year. And with risk of setting Rich off, I do think that Fitzpatrick is going to throw the ball and not care as much as the previous quarterbacks did about jump balls. So that might take away some of the passing work that Gibson and the other backs see, because he might be pushing the ball further down the field a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Alex Smith, Boyd's, you know, JD McKissic's numbers, that some of those target shares when Alex Smith was in the quarterback chair was absolutely obscene. And that's because we all know what Alex Smith is at this point in his career. I do think we're going to see a change in the offense. I do think, as you said, you know, the average depth of target's probably going to increase. We're going to see a lot more of those 50-50 balls from Fitzpatrick. For me, you know, I've got to harper back to that point. I've got Akers, I've got Dobbins, and I've got Gibson all in the same tier for me.
Yeah.
And the price is very different. You know, Akers is going as the RB7, Dobbins is going as the RB9, and Antonio Gibson is currently going as the RB13. So I'm pretty much saying that to me, they're all in that same tier. I think they're all pretty much of a muchness. It's just about what you prefer, but you can get one at a significantly reduced price compared to the other two.
Yeah, he's slightly cheaper in trade value. I'd say against the other three that we've mentioned in that tier, and I personally have him above Akers and Dobbins. So I would buy if I could, but I think one of my league mates would kill me if I didn't mention it. There is a league mate called Jason in about four or five of my leagues where every time he could draft Gibson, he did, and he was majorly right. He called it from day one. He absolutely loved the guy while everyone was being scared off by those 30 carries in college. So I think that if I had the opportunity to go and buy him, I would, but I don't because I've got someone that won't let him go for more than two or three first plus. So.
Yeah. I think look, it's difficult going out and buying these second year guys because I think they're all overpriced, to be honest. I think with the exception maybe of Clyde Edwards-Helaire and AJ Dillon, who, you know, we've discussed their circumstances, I think all of these running backs are being overpriced from their production because of the age. And that's, to me, just a difficult price to pay. The final guy is perhaps the most interesting, Liam, in terms of James Robinson. He had a pretty incredible year last year. You know, he finished as the RB4. Yet nobody knew who he was, certainly until, you know, the preseason. Nobody knew who the running back was going to be before after Leonard Fournette was cut, and he kind of came out of nowhere and was a fantasy stud and certainly won people titles. They've brought in a new regime in terms of Meyer, and we've now seen James Robinson potentially as the 1B to Travis Etienne, if at best, maybe even less. What do you think of James Robinson? Was it a flash in the pan, one-hit wonder, or do you think he holds some value moving forward?
I do think it was a flash in the pan season. I for his sake and the type of story that he would have brought to the NFL, should he hit, would be insane. It would be another Austin Eckler, essentially. I know they're separate players, but they're both undrafted rookies coming in, and they're now top, or would have been top backs in the league. So I think draft capital does speak in the RB world, unfortunately, and I'm not a huge fan of that. And taking Etienne in the first round when you have so many other holes on that roster, I think that speaks a lot to what they're going to do in that backfield. I'm not saying James Robinson is going to completely fade away and he'll never be seen again, but I do think that most of his production will have come from the mass volume that he got there. It was Gardner Minshew, or I think Glennon played a couple of games, and then they put Luton in as well.
So. Yeah, I think that he was. His production last year was, you know, I hate on these RB2 plodders that I call them, but where he was an RB1 plodder in that his production was purely volume based. I think that he's not fantastic in terms of talent. He's not a great prospect profile, which is why he was undrafted. And I don't think he's a great NFL back, but there was nobody else in that offense. And that's the reason he got the production he did. I think he's competent. I think he's now, you know, going to make a nice little career for himself. He'll probably have a 6 or 7 year career. He'll probably bounce around a couple of teams. But there's a reason why Jacksonville went out and spent a first round pick on a running back, because James Robinson isn't explosive and Travis Etienne is. And I think that look, for the price James Robinson's going, he's around that sort of RB30 price again. I think he's going as RB27 in latest startup. ADP, I'm personally not paying that because I think that you can get him cheaper. I think that, yeah, he's probably going to be one of these that will put up, you know, decent stats at the end of the year as an RB 20 to 30. And you probably think, oh, he had a decent year. But actually, you're never going to feel great starting him unless there is an injury. So I would probably sell for whatever pennies I can get right now.
Yeah, so I'm the same as you. He was not a volume-based running back last year. He was sixth in attempts, rushing attempts. So I just struggle to see the value that he's got at the moment in that offense now that they've taken Etienne in the first round. And I'm not going to harp on about Etienne because we've had months and months of talk about it. So you could probably listen back in any of the other pods or have a look on Twitter. There'll be plenty of Twitter receipts on there to tell you what Etienne is like. But I do think that Etienne is going to be the running back one in that offense. But I don't want to draft either of them because of the price that they're both going at compared to where I think they're going to end up at the end of the season.
Yeah. So Liam, put your money where your mouth is. Of these elite eight running backs from last year, if you had to have one player at their current cost on every one of their rosters, who would that player be?
Clyde, every day.
Yeah.
Clyde Edwards-Hilaire. The key phrase that you said there was at cost. If you didn't say that, I was going to say Jonathan Taylor straight up. I think that's what everyone would have said. But yeah, at cost at the moment, I think Clyde Edwards-Hilaire. And obviously we can't predict injuries, and likelihood is one of these backs are going to get injured, so we're not going to be able to see them all go through a full season and see which one is quote unquote better based on one season. But I do think that Clyde's stock is going to rise over the next year, whereas I can only see a couple of the other guys falling down or staying where they are. I think my other guy probably would have been Gibson, but his price is much higher than Clyde's at the moment, and I think they'll end up pretty much even, if not Clyde, a little bit behind Gibson this year.
Yeah. Okay, and then we've got a lorry load of kind of others that perhaps warranted mentioning. Are there any other running backs, whether they were drafted or undrafted, that came out last year that you think are interesting, worth monitoring, that you'd kind of be interested at their price?
I think the main one for me that I've spoken about, I don't think it was last week's pod, I think it was the week before, so if you haven't listened to that one, please go back and listen. But I talked about Darrington Evans a couple of weeks ago. He's kind of like AJ Dillon at the moment. If Henry goes down, there is no one else really in that backfield to pick up the volume. And then that's where you can sell him on to a contender, or if you're a contender, use him for the production. I also think he's going to see quite a bit of passing down work, or at least I'm hoping that, because I do think he's a better pass catching back than Henry. So we'll see where that goes. But I think at cost at the moment, you're probably spending a third at max on him. I'd be surprised if anyone was asking for a second for him, or if anyone was paying a second for him. But I do think that he's just one injury away from that volume.
Yeah, I think if I can mention one, and again, I think he's probably going under the radar, and that's Salvon Ahmed, who was an undrafted free agent. Obviously, he went to the 49ers, then ended up in Miami. Now, we've seen Miami not address the running back position this offseason. I think a lot of people were, you know, penciling in, whether it be Najee Harris, sorry, Lee, or some others into that backfield. And I think that they didn't. And everybody's just turned around and gone, right, okay, well, Miles Gaskin's the RB1. He's going to be the stud. He's going to be, you know, decent for a fantasy perspective. And nobody has sort of mentioned the fact that Salvon Ahmed, in the few weeks that he was the RB1 and he absolutely produced. He was RB31 in terms of points per game, and that includes several games where he didn't really see the field. I do wonder if, yes, it's at cost. He's probably, you know, available on some waiver wires. He's probably costing you a fourth or fifth round pick. I just think that nobody knows who is the kind of the main guy in that Miami backfield. Everybody thinks it's Miles Gaskin, but this time last year, nobody was going out and buying Miles Gaskin. So I think if you can identify that congested backfield, if you can go and buy as many options in that backfield as possible, and you know, pretty much every other option outside of Miles Gaskin is dirt cheap. You know, you mentioned Malcolm Brown earlier. He's obviously there. There's, you know, DeAndre Washington, I think, still floating around. For me, the cost, I'm intrigued by Salvon Ahmed. If I go and pick him up off my waiver wire, even spend a fourth or fifth round pick and he turns to nothing, I'm not that concerned. But I do think that he's an interesting player to monitor.
Yeah, I think with Ahmed, he's got definitely good for the cost, but I don't think you'll get him for a fourth. I'm not saying that you should pay a third. I just think that in a trade player for a fourth really isn't going to move the needle for anyone, so they're probably just going to decline it and get or just take that shot on him producing. But I think with the way to do it is if you're already going for a trade with the Salvador Ahmed arm owner, go for a trade and then just include him as a little throw in. I don't think it's going to cost you anything, and I don't think the deal's going to break down over him being included. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think that's the best method to go and get him anyway.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because I think realistically, whenever you're sending an offer of a fourth round or fifth round pick for a player, it's getting rejected 9 times out of 10 because nobody really wants a fourth or fifth round pick. But yeah, if you can get him as a throw-in in a larger trade, I think it's a really smart play, because yeah, I'm not sitting here saying he's going to be a stud, but I just think at the cost it's going to, cost to acquire him, he's worth a dart throw, whether it's on, those deeper rosters, if you can still add him onto a taxi squad, if it's not rookies only, I think it could be an interesting point. Well, that concludes the podcast, Liam. So next week, I don't think we've discussed it, but we're going to continue our soft miss scrutiny series. Are we going to go wide receivers or are we going to go quarterbacks and tight ends?
I think we go wide receivers next week. We can go from there.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to that because it's a very exciting crop of wide receivers last year. So thank you ever so much, guys, for everybody that's joined. We started, I think, 6 Dynasty startups in the last week in the end. A couple are still ticking along. A couple are slower than the others. But yeah, really enjoyed interacting with all of you that are in it. It's been fantastic seeing all of you getting involved. So very much grateful for you that have been involved. For those of you who haven't yet entered the 5-Yard Rush Scott Fishbowl competition, there is still time. You've got a couple of days to record yourself rushing 5 yards and get it sent in on Twitter. It is on the main 5-Yard Rush accounts pinned tweet. So by all means, go and have a look at that. But Liam, before you go, remind us, where can we see you? Where can we follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, so on Twitter, I'm at the FSA tweets. So go find me on there. And then the 5-Yard Rush Dynasty account still needs a couple more follows. So go follow that. I believe it's at 5-Yard Dynasty, Rich.
It is, yeah. We're creeping towards that 1,000 follower number. I think we're up about 600 now. So yeah, if you're not following, please go and give it a follow. It'd be nice to hit that 1,000 mark before we get to the season, certainly. But thank you very much for joining us again, Liam. Thank you very much for listening, guys. And we will see you again next week.
Redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.